Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
If you've been questioning what you can do to live a more meaningful life, this episode is for you. We're going to take a look at the things that get in the way of our leading lives with the kind of purpose and fulfillment that we'd like.
Our guest is best-selling author Joshua Becker, who's written several books on minimalism and intentional living. He's the founder of Becoming Minimalist, a website dedicated to inspiring others to find more in life by owning less. His new book is called Things That Matter: Overcoming Distraction to Pursue a More Meaningful Life. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I feel a lot of pressure to sound smart after that fabulous introduction.
You know, there is an interesting story behind why you wrote Things That Matter. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I started a blog called becomingminimalist.com, and that was 12 or 13 years ago, and have written several books about minimalism and owning less, and how owning less frees us up to live more focused and intentional lives on things that matter in the long run. And I thought that I was going to be done writing books after I wrote those two books, both The Why Behind Minimalism and How to Apply It in Your Home. But I was at a conference in Phoenix, it was about 3 years ago, put on by Charlie Gilkey, who had just written a book called Start Finishing. And the conference was all about how do we finish these projects that we start? Like, how do we actually get things done? And at the beginning of the conference, at the beginning of the workshop, he said, I want you to apply these principles to something specific in your life. So close your eyes and answer this question. If you were to die today, what is the one thing you would most regret not finishing? And this book immediately popped into my mind. It's a talk I'd done a couple times, but had never put it into a book. And I said, I think this book probably sums up my work even better and in more ways than just talking about owning less. It's about bringing intentionality into other distractions that keep us from things that matter.
What's the most common distraction? It seems like a basic question, but I feel like I'm going to be surprised at the answer.
I can tell you what I think most people think the most common distraction is. As a matter of fact, when I tell people the title of the book, Things That Matter, Overcoming Distraction to Pursue a More Meaningful Life, most people think to themselves, oh good, because I need to put my phone away. Mm-hmm. And it is certainly a chapter how technology, social media, the trivial really is what I call it, can distract us from things that matter in the long run. But the book gets into much deeper topics, topics about how the pursuit of money can keep us from things that matter, how the pursuit of possessions, how even past mistakes in our lives can become a distraction, how fear can become a distraction, how the pursuit of leisure, how these things that very subtly, I think, very common and normal, even encouraged in the world and society that we live in. And so we slowly start chasing all of those things. And we start doing that at the expense of things that matter in the long run. We did a survey as part of the book, and 77% of people feel that they are distracted from the things that matter most in their lives. Which is the most common? I think it probably depends on the personality and the person, but I hope the book helps people think through some of these in a new way, as well as offer some advice on how to overcome them.
You mentioned money being a big distraction for people, that the desire for money causes many people to sacrifice their true passions and objectives just to acquire more of it. So if someone is listening to this right now and they're stressed out about money, as many of our listeners probably are, how do you recommend they alleviate that stress?
Yeah, well, that's an easy one. That's an easy one.
Okay. Good. Yeah. In five words or less.
How do we overcome the desire for more money all the time? I could talk all day about this. Let me give you some of the stats. I think that start sending me down this road of wondering if we're thinking about money differently. So 78% of Americans have financial related stress. And the first time I read that stat, I was both not shocked and shocked. Like I know I've had my own financial related stress. I know it's pretty common. But when you consider the fact that we live in the wealthiest nation in the history of the world, like why are almost 80% of us still stressed about money? Like there's more money in our country than, like our standard of living is higher than at any point in the history of the world. And yet we're all still, or many of us are still so stressed about money. And I think the stat is something like 90% of millionaires say that they don't feel stable with the amount of money that they have. Which caused me to like dive into this and think through this. Like, is it really that we don't have enough money, or is it that we keep looking for money to provide something that it will never provide for us? And I think it's the second one, where we keep thinking more money will make us happier, or more money will make us feel more secure. And we get this like ballpark figure of, well, if I just made this much money each year, if I had this much money saved up for retirement, if I had this much money, then I will feel secure with what I have, or I will finally be able to be happy. And we reach that level of income, or in a lot of cases, we eventually reach that level of income, or we save that amount of money, or we reach that level of net worth. And we don't feel more secure, and we don't feel necessarily happier. And rather than thinking to ourselves, maybe money isn't ever going to provide those things, the thinking is, oh, I just had the wrong number in mind, and I actually need this much money. I actually need to be making that much more money. And so we live in this thinking where we always think more money is going to be the answer. And when that is the case, you can't help but be stressed about it, because my life could be happier. I could feel more secure if I just had more money. And so I think that's kind of in my estimation, that's the root of the cause. 80% of Americans think that they'll be happier if they have more money. And 77% of Americans say that it affects their daily decisions. Their desire and need for more money affects their daily decisions. And I'm not making the case, the book doesn't make the case that money is wrong, that money is evil, that having money is bad, that we shouldn't be providing for our families. Like, the book doesn't say any of that. The book just says, when I constantly feel like I need more money all the time, and that becomes what I'm pursuing, then there are more important pursuits. There are more important things I could be accomplishing with my life that tend to suffer in the long run.
Yeah. And you
said, How'd I do?
That was great. That was great. It was a little more than five words, but it was necessary.
No, that's a really wonderful answer. I really want to ponder that.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, I agree when you say that you'll be prouder of the money you gave away than the money that you kept for yourself. But what I thought would be really difficult, you say that even when we're stressed about money, we should give some away. Can you make a sales pitch for that for people who maybe are thinking, well, that sounds crazy. I can barely make enough for rent right now.
Yeah. So the greatest benefit of the greatest personal benefit of generosity, I think, is the realization that we already have enough. Maya Angelou said it very well. We need so much less than we think we need. And now this isn't to discount that there are certainly a percentage of people who don't have enough money. Like I'm not saying that that's not the case, but probably most people listening have enough money coming in. And the way we discover this is we give something away. Like just give away $5 this week to someone, to something, to a cause that you believe in. Give away $5. And at the end of the week, see if you still have food, if you still have clothing, if you still have shelter, if you're still provided for. In almost every circumstance, you will find that you do and that you are. And then give away $5 the next week and $5 the next week. And suddenly what you realize is, hey, I can give away $5 this week, or maybe you're already giving, give away an extra $5 or an extra $10 or an extra $50. And what happens is, if you can picture this, I start giving away $5 a week and I get to the end and I'm still provided for. I still have what I need to live. And suddenly the thinking doesn't need to be, I don't have enough to live on. Suddenly it becomes, I have enough to live on and I have extra that I can give away to someone else. And suddenly we start realizing, okay, maybe I don't have as much money as I want. Maybe I'm not buying everything that I want to be buying, but there's enough money coming in that I can support my family and I can survive. I'm not the richest person in the world, but I have enough already. And as a matter of fact, I have so much that I have a little bit that I can be giving to other people. That's kind of the thinking behind how generosity is what really helps us reshape the understanding of how much we actually need.
And so money is one of those common distractions that you talk about that prevent people from living a more meaningful life. And you say fear is as well. Let's talk about that a little bit. In what ways?
Yeah, fear shows up in a lot of different ways. It was a fascinating chapter to write. It was one that I didn't have on the top of my mind when I went to write the book. But in conversations with my editor and my publisher, actually, is my editor who was the first one to say, "What do you think about this distraction?" And I'm like, "You are totally right." And we started like researching it and looking into it a little bit more. And the fear of failure pops up in a lot of different ways. The fear of failure that would even get us started down something that we think would be meaningful or we know would be meaningful, but we're afraid that we're going to fail at it. The fear of failure pops up in the goals that we set for our lives. If I'm afraid of failing, one of the indications is that I set really small goals for myself, because if it's attainable, then I have less fear of failing. If it's a smaller goal, then there's less fear associated with going at it. But it keeps us from dreaming big dreams for our lives. It keeps us from getting back up and starting again. I tell a story of a friend of mine who how fear of failure like even sabotaged every career that he was in. Like he was in a field that was good for him and he excelled at, but he constantly lived with this fear of being found out, that he wasn't as good as people thought he was, or that, you know, just fear of failing in his job. And literally the higher he climbed in every business and company and organization that he worked in, the more his fear gripped him that someone would find out that he's actually a failure. Like the exact opposite is happening. He's proving himself over and over again, but the fear just kept him. And he said, "I eventually resigned from every good job I ever had." And so identifying that that distraction just so that we can live our most meaningful lives, so that we can, the way I like to say it is, like, we all want to accomplish we all should be accomplishing the greatest good that we can for the greatest number of people in our lives. And if fear is keeping us from doing that, then it's a distraction that we should identify and, take the steps to overcome, for not just for your sake, but for all of our sakes. Like we all need you to be living your best life, accomplishing the most that you can.
We love having you as part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. We know a lot of you want to be your own boss or already operate your own business. That's why we want you to know about Shopify.
Hear that? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, and the moment another business dream becomes reality.
Shopify puts you in control of every sale channel. So whether you're selling satin sheets from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering organic olive oil on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered.
Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle.
And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers.
Once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere.
What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 170 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is possibility powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nobody, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/nobody to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/nobody. What about overcoming our past mistakes? Or say we have regrets about, like, how a relationship ended, or feel like we could have done a better job in our last meeting, in a presentation. How do we overcome that?
It was the most heartbreaking survey result that I got back in preparation for the book. We asked, here are the results. 60% of people say that they are held back from the future they want to be living because of a past mistake they committed in their past. And we didn't force them to define that. They could define that however they want. Certainly, I think, you know, big things come to mind in a person's past, but also it could be little things, or like a combination of things that keep tripping us up over and over again. So 60% of people feel they're held back by past mistakes they've committed. And then it gets even worse. 55% of people say that they are held back from the future they want to be living because of a mistake committed against them. So something that someone did to them in the past is keeping them from living the life they want to be living. That is a lot of potential being bottled up. 60%, 55%. I'm saying obviously some overlap between those, but like at some point we've got to look back and face our regrets and face our mistakes and know that we can't change what we did, but we can learn from that mistake and we can learn what we can from it and redeem it. And try to learn the lessons that help us become the person that we can be in the future. And, past mistakes committed against us, again, a thing that we need to turn and face, and we need to run towards that. And we need to figure out how, whether professionally or just personally or spiritually to overcome that that wrong committed against us, because it can't keep holding power over us every single day of our lives.
What role do our possessions play in preventing us from really pursuing things that matter?
Yeah, it was really the distraction that sent me down this road when I discovered minimalism and noticed how I found minimalism on a Saturday morning after spending hours cleaning my garage while my son was playing alone in the backyard, and suddenly realized that all the things I owned weren't making me happy, but actually all the things I owned were actually taking me away from the very thing that did bring me joy and meaning in life. And that's a very different realization. I think most people would say that they're not looking for happiness in their possessions, but it's something very different the moment we realize how all the things we've accumulated are actually keeping us from happiness. Mm-hmm. Possessions distract us from meaning in, number one, just the things that we have to take care of. They steal our time, just all the cleaning and organizing and maintaining and managing that go into all the stuff that we've acquired. Not to mention all the money that we've wasted on all that stuff. As I like to say, look around, all that clutter used to be money. And all that money used to be time. But there's a third way that possessions distract us from significance and meaning, in that they become the object of our affection, or our energy is probably our attention is the better way to say it. Like, how much mental energy and time do we just waste thinking about all the things that we wish we had, or all the things that we want to have, the bigger house that we wish we lived in, the newer car that we wanted to drive, or the different technology we wish we had, the new style of clothes that we wish we owned. And we just, when our lives become about acquiring more and more stuff, we always rob us of our greatest potential. Our lives are too valuable to waste chasing and accumulating material possessions. And that's how they become a distraction.
I think that the desire to accumulate things starts when you're a kid and you want stuffed animals, you want toys. So I think that then it would be best to try and teach kids why it's beneficial to be minimalistic. How do we do that?
So interesting as you were saying that. As you were saying, I think it would be most beneficial to teach kids to not want things. And I was thinking to myself, well, the only way we do that is by getting the adults to stop wanting stuff that they don't need. And so then when you asked,
you know, the parents from wanting to spoil their kids, I think it's really natural to want to get them those toys.
Right.
Yeah. So how do we teach the kids? Like we have to do it as adults, as parents. Like I help people own less stuff and declutter their home and minimize their possessions. And like, how do I teach my kids this lesson? Or a lot of times they'll think to them, like the first week, they'll be like, well, how do I go through my kids' stuff? That's where all the clutter is. And I always say, you can't start decluttering your home by making your kids get rid of all their things. Like you need to go first, and you can't expect your kids to want to get rid of their extra toys. You can't expect your kids to not want the newest stuffed animal when you have a garage so full of things that you can't park in it. When you have a closet so full of clothes that you don't wear, when you have closets that are stuffed full, when you're constantly going to Target and having things from Amazon delivered to your front door, like they're just learning from us that you buy a bunch of things that you don't need and you keep a bunch of stuff that you don't need. And so I think the work has to start with the parents. It has to start with us. Like you go through your closet Get rid of the things you don't need. You go through your kitchen and get rid of the things you don't need. You go through the garage and get rid of things that you don't need. You stop talking about wanting things that you don't have. You stop buying things that you don't need. And your kid will catch on. We minimized about 60, 70% of the stuff in our home. My son was 5 and my daughter was 2, and kind of stumbled into just doing our own things first. But did our own living room and kitchen and bedroom and bathroom and linen closet. And I think by the time we got to my son's toy room, like he just knew it was coming. Like he just knew eventually we were going to be getting to the toys. And he was ready for it. Like I think he had mentally prepared himself. I think that we had learned some things along the way about some of the emotions that pop up, some of the tips and tricks that work. And I think that this is how we do it. And I think we overcome envy when we start directing our money and time towards things that matter in the long run. And as we begin to overcome envy and jealousy, we're able to better teach our kids how to do that as well.
Who do you admire in terms of their ability to pursue things that matter?
Oh, that is so many people. My grandfather, my parents, a couple different bosses that I've had in life, some people that are just personal friends of mine that I look up to. I suppose on a grand scale, I think of people who could be doing a job or a career where they could be making a lot more money, but instead they chose a job or career that helps people instead. I really look up to some of those folks as idols is probably a strong word, but people that I look up to and think I want my life to look like that. I don't want to sacrifice helping others and serving others just for the sake of a bigger paycheck. But when you think about it, really, the world, magazines, society, like loves praising rich people and people who are incredibly well off, or incredibly famous. They write the books and they become the books that people want to pick up and read and learn from. And how do I do life better? But like in reality, when you think about the people that you most want to be like, we tend to think of people who are kind, generous, compassionate. They live lives of morality and integrity with values and character. Like these are the people in life that I most want to be like. And so I think those are the people that I try to learn from and try to set up as mentors and idols, as opposed to just someone who certainly I could learn business skills from and personal development skills from. But the people I most want to look like don't tend to be those types of folks.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of each show, we ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? So your book is filled with ways to overcome distractions, but in your personal life, what do you wish someone had told you about overcoming distractions that you wish you'd known and you want to pass on to our audience?
Oh my goodness. That is, I think the whole book is that, the whole book is a number of, hey, how come no one had told me about minimalism before? How come no one's talking about, hey, maybe you already have enough money as opposed to being stressed about it all the time? There's a whole chapter in the book on the value of work. And I frame it in this section on the distraction of leisure. CNN ran an article, How the New American Dream is Early Retirement. And I think to myself, if the goal of work is just to get out of work, like where's the joy in that? Like it's just this thing that I have to do until I'm 65 so I can finally stop doing it for the rest of my life. And I read an article a few years ago, an essay by Dorothy Sayers written around World War II. And she really framed the idea of work differently. And she said, when work is viewed selfishly, as most of us view work today, I go to work to earn the money to buy the thing or to take the vacation or to retire as soon as I can. Work is just what I do for what I can get out of it. That we always fall short of its greatest meaning in our lives. And that work at its core is something I do that helps other people. Like I'm good with numbers, so I'm the banker. I'm good with managing people, so I'm the manager. I take the money at the grocery store, which helps get the food from the farmer to the person, and it gets the money from the person back to the farmer so they can produce more food for all of society. When we start to see work as love, I do what I do because it helps other people so they can do what they do to help other people. And society moves forward and everyone is helped because we're all doing what we're good at. Then it really changes how we view work. And that was probably the, hey, how come no one described work in this way for me? It really reframes it from something that I can't wait to get out of to something that I enjoy doing because it helps other people. And why would I want to stop doing that to lay on a beach for the rest of my life?
And Joshua, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet and find out more about your books and your work?
The book is called Things That Matter, Overcoming Distraction to Pursue a More Meaningful Life, and available in every format and available everywhere. My home base online is becomingminimalist.com, and I'm on all the social media platforms and have a YouTube channel and do all the... I started a couple magazines. I have different books. There's different things that I do, but everything tends to run through becomingminimalist.com. So I would send people there to find out more. Thanks so much for asking.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we would love to have you back again. I think we really only kind of scratched the surface of this. And so at some point in the future, we'd love to have another conversation with you.
You got it. Definitely. Well, if you want a way to see what the listeners think, maybe they all hate me and don't want me back, then don't invite me. But if they leave nice things in the comments and they leave nice reviews, then I'd love to come and chat again. This is splendid.
Yeah, we would really enjoy it. Again, our thanks to Joshua Becker, author of Things That Matter: Overcoming Distraction to Pursue a More Meaningful Life. And again, his website is becomingminimalist.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.